This is Jim Inkster, and it's a pleasure to have as our guest at this time Brian Kilmeade, who has done it again. We've talked with him before about biographies of American presidents, and his latest work is in paperback with Don Yeager, Andrew Jackson and the Miracle of New Orleans, the battle that shaped America's destiny. And good morning to you, Brian Kilmeade.
Jim, how's it going?
Doing well. It's good to talk with you. And Andrew Jackson follows your other earlier works with George Washington and Thomas Jefferson. And the seventh president certainly shapes up as a man of great fascination, doesn't he?
It's all about Louisiana with me. Like, I did not try to do what John Meacham did and what Dave McCullough does or Ron Chernow. I'm not that smart. I also don't have 10 years. What I want to do is just grab, I think, a moment in American history that doesn't get enough attention. And I focused on Andrew Jackson and how he became the most famous man in America and a two-term president. It was all built around something you can relate to, and that's the Battle of New Orleans. And when I found out what was at stake, when I looked at the War of 1812, when we found documents to reveal had Andrew Jackson lost what it would have meant, I thought, I got to bring this forward. And now it's out on paperback, and we added a new afterword because it seems, sadly, that it's so controversial these days to talk about American history. His grave was just defiled. So in the afterword, I just tried to put in what other presidents thought of, besides President Trump, who loves him, by FDR, Teddy Roosevelt, Harry Truman, Lincoln, and Reagan. They all thought he was an extraordinary president. So I put in their perspective to try to get America's mind out of 2018, because it seemed to be somewhat of a war on history.
Well, Andrew Jackson served as the United States president from 1829 to 1837, but a decade and a half earlier, he was the hero of the Battle of New Orleans. And this is a man who had significant health issues. He survived duels. He killed men in duels. He was a fellow who lived a full life.
Yeah, and he survived a duel and still had to fight two very brutal wars against American Indians who were allied with the British. He actually went and blew the Spanish out of Pensacola, and then he went over and feeling a little bit better but suffering from dysentery at 6'1", get this, 140 pounds. He was able to eye the battlefield before the battle, was able to assemble, take his 1,200-man militia, make it a 5,800-man militia in 3.5 weeks, and put together a force and a plan that would just destroy the British in 45 minutes. And then we found documents, and I'll talk about this in Baton Rouge at 12:30 at the Great American Lecture Series, where you guys can come down and you can find out BrianKilmeade.com, where is how he was able to do it, what he was able to do, what everybody in the town was able to pitch in and overcome. It's just a great story of Louisiana and a great story of an American force, which was uniquely American in that it was everybody. You got Cajuns, free men of color, pirates. You had regular militia, Tennesseans, Kentuckians. People from all around came in to fight for America. I thought, you know, sometimes when you research it, it gives you chills.
Well, Jackson Square stands tall and proud in New Orleans. His statue has not been removed, but he did own slaves. And as you noted, he was brutal in warfare against Indians and others. Does that in any way detract from his legacy?
No, everything you said matters. Everything you said. But, you know, he wasn't walking around saying, I see some Indians, let's take them out. There was always a reason to battle, whether it was in revenge for a massacre of a town or whether it was the middle of a war. The Indian Removal Act was almost reminds me of the scenario of Bay of Pigs. Eisenhower drew it up, left it, and then Kennedy picks it up and it's a disaster. Jackson talked about it. Van Buren picks it up, executes it poorly. It's Jackson's plan, and it's a disaster. Does he alleviate responsibility of the Trail of Tears? Absolutely not. But then, is that the way he would have done it if in power? No. So this is the type of thing that it's worthy of debate. But when I tell you that Reagan, FDR, and Lincoln looked to him in terms of in moments when they were doubting themselves, I thought, well, let's put that in the afterword. So if they try to defile his grave again, there'll be ample pushback to say nobody's perfect that's on a statue, ever. There's no human being that's perfect. But, man, they did enough to impact America to be worthy of that monument.
Well, he lived to be 78 years old, which was a long life at that time. And as you say, he had dysentery, tuberculosis, smallpox, depression, malaria. How did he survive so long?
guts. I mean, when you are, when you lose your dad before you're born, when your mom has got to do anything it takes to support three young children, when your brother dies in the Revolutionary War and you volunteer with your other brother and you both get captured and go into prison, when you don't, when your brother and he, you both got whacked in the head by a British officer for making it so hard to capture them, his brother never recovered from the battle. When he dies, he ends up just him and his mom dies. So when you're orphaned at 14 years old and have to be raised by a county and a country, you you decide that you're going to matter. And you don't make excuses, and you find a way. And he became a lawyer, a congressman, a senator, and a president. And I'm not a biologist. I'm not a physician. I can't tell you how he did it. But in the end, there was a sense that his life was complete, that he knew the end was coming, that he was able to calm everybody down to watch him die. And Sam Houston, who we mentored and who Sam Houston looked up to, obviously, missed him by just a couple of minutes to say goodbye. But when he died, the whole nation mourned for themselves because he was their leader. Almost like, I understand I didn't live through it, but FDR, who had 3.5 terms. You know, people mm-hmm. felt like he was always going to be there because he was even a factor after he was out of office.
Brian Kilmeade, a man born in New York City, how did you become fascinated with this son of the South, Andrew Jackson?
Well, a couple of things. I got lucky in that I focused on George Washington's spiring for about 20 years, and I never thought I could do that book. But then I got urged to do it and try it. If I brought new information, I was able to do that. And then I felt, what's next logical? I feel like we've done a lot in the Revolution. Then I came to Thomas Jefferson, the Tripoli Pirates. So I was able to sink into Jefferson, but I could never do the definitive biography on one of the most brilliant men that America ever had. But I was able to focus on that. And then I said, what's next? Well, I said, the War of 1812. And I said, what needs to be told? Well, the Battle of Baltimore, because the national anthem was controversial at the time. And then the more I looked at it, this battle really drew me to it. And then after speaking with John Meacham, reading his book, and then reading four or five others, I said, this is it. And this is the battle that matters. So I kind of went into it and then dove into it. And 3 years later, we were able to get the book out.
Brian Kilmeade, you are a prominent sportscaster, or were at one time. Many of us remember that iteration of your career. People who cover sports, as I do on occasion, we like lists. If you were to name the top five presidents, who would be on your list?
A great question, and I have not ranked it, but you know, I just don't think there's an argument to be better than Washington. I don't think this guy mattered more in a time in which we were worse off than FDR. Republicans might argue with that, but when you look at what he had to deal with and the action he had to take and the way he had to consolidate power to get it done, I think you have to definitely look at him in terms of somebody that changed the course of the country, got interest rates under control, and gave a sense of optimism to the nation. I think it would have to be Reagan. When you talk about a guy that personified what this country was or wanted to be, the rough and ready, take on all comers, overcome a childhood of nothing but being sickly and being homebound, to being a burly guy that went on African safaris. It was Teddy Roosevelt really impressed me, especially by the fact that everyone thought he was too dumb and too raw to be president. That seems to be a good combination these days. So, I mean, those are the ones that really stand out. But I would have to put Jackson in there, even if I don't agree with everything he did. I love the fact that his ear and his passion was with the people, not with the elite. And sadly, I didn't know this until I really dove into it. But when you look at Monroe, Adams, Jefferson, and Madison, you see, and the people that weren't become president but around them, they were almost, and Hamilton and those, they were almost a clique. And no one could really be worthy of penetrating that clique. And then in comes Jackson, who's a self-made man who becomes president, who never had any economic and political connections. I'd have to put Jackson in that, and Lincoln, of course, right after Washington.
Good to talk with you, as always. Brian Kilmeade. Take care.